effective fitness combatives mission is to provide quality content and education for law enforcement officers through proven science-driven fitness and combatives. This EFC user course is a complete online program designed to elevate your approach to combatives with the ability to learn and train anywhere, anytime. Access the course materials through your browser at efcombatives.com or from the EF Combatives app available for download through Apple and Google Play stores. The course is broken down into easy-to-digest micro-learning modules, enabling you to move through the lecture, technique demonstration videos, and additional resources at your own pace. You also have direct access to industry-leading instructors for questions and feedback related to your training. After completion of this course, you will receive an EFC user certification that is valid for 2 years. We highly suggest you continue your combatives training at an EFC certified academy and continue on to other advanced courses within our curriculum. With your time in, did your agency give you options of alternate training, alternate methods, so on and so forth?
Yeah, so the LAPD actually did a really good job. And again, I can't, even though I'm technically still a reserve, I haven't been up since I retired. So I can't comment on what's happening right now, but historically they've done a really good job of taking things that have happened, past instances, and applying them to training. It's one of those things where, yeah, it's kind of a hackneyed old phrase, you know, tools in the toolbox, things like that. And a lot of instructors just get lazy and they'll use that as a term to throw enough shit up against a wall to see what sticks. And then they'll hang their hat on it. But the people that were running our training side of things really did take that to heart. So we would have several options. There were very few things where we were taught this has to be the way it is. And some of those things, like I didn't particularly agree with. I'll say it right now. I think I don't like the way we do felony stops, but I was never in a position to change that. I mean, God, I had enough problems changing the things that I did change. But all in all, they've done a very good job of being realistic and showing options and getting people to kind of think holistically when it comes to problem solving. But again, this is something like you and I have talked about this, right? Without sustainment training, it's garbage, because what people do, they fall back on their habits. Like, and this was reinforced to me so much when I made sergeant the last little bit of time before I retired, when I was field sergeant, and I'd have to review body camera. And good Lord, guys that were not too far out of the academy. But what happens is, you know, you get out of the academy, you go to your field training officers. And what's the first thing field training officers do? With recruits, what's the first thing they tell the new police officers?
So what I was told was basically keep your mouth shut and learn.
Keep your mouth shut, learn, but also they don't know what they're talking about at the academy. This is how we do it.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I said that as an FTO.
Well, let me tell you, they do know what they're talking about at the police academy.
Yeah, it's true.
And while there's plenty of room for things to be tweaked, to just throw that stuff out the window, the way that I saw it thrown out the window when I started looking at body camera footage was, it was scary. It was scary.
Yeah, and I would have definitely agreed to that point. Because obviously I think people misunderstand the purpose of an academy, right? It's just the foundation. Like, they're taking someone who is supposed to know nothing about law enforcement, and within a very short period of time, turn them into somewhat of a competent police officer, which we all know when you leave the academy, at least the way that I felt, I was like, as soon as I got back in the patrol car, I was like, I don't know anything. Like, I felt like I didn't know anything. That's not necessarily true, right? Like, you get thousands of reps doing things. You're getting
information through a fire hose, but it's where you learn to decipher those skills of where you should focus. Because maybe some guys are already really good shooters before they get to the, you know, the academy. They've been shooting competition for years, right? Maybe they're at a certain level. Some guys have been doing defensive tactics. They've been training jiu-jitsu for a certain amount of time, so they already have that level of competency. Maybe they don't know dick about case law, tactics, the things like that. So I definitely agree. I've had my fair share of discussions about academy training. And again, I think to say like forget everything is a terrible precedence to set moving forward.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, all these things that we teach historically through multiple academies across the United States, are they perfect? No, but like you said, they're a foundation and they should be built on. But man, some of the things one of the scariest things that I saw that really kind of made me reflect on the way that we train our young police officers when they get to the field was I had two young coppers do a legit traffic stop. Now, their articulation for the traffic stop was pretty poor, but they identified, they understood that these people were, pardon my language, they were shitbags because they had enough training and experience and they had started to develop that little spidey sense. You know, it's not a hunch. I hate when people say, oh, it's a hunt. No, that's relying on something intangible. These kids had started to have enough experience to where they were able to identify certain precursors, furtive movements, which I know we don't like to say furtive movements, but that's just what it is when people sure. look over their shoulder and straighten up, you know, little yeah. cues like that. So they do this traffic stop, four guys in the car, and they pull the driver out. The driver's getting chippy, so they both get sucked into the driver. Okay, so we have generally two officer cars, and we have contact and cover. And the cover's job is to cover, not get sucked into conversation right. with somebody who's chippy. And sure enough, chip, 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 they get sucked in, turns into a use of force. The use of force itself, not bad. The cops exercised restraint. Their techniques were good. There was actually a really good takedown, a hip throw. I was like, oh, nice.
Right, yeah.
The problem was the two guys in the back. One of the guys gets out, and we see this on the dash cam. We don't see it on the body cameras. One of the guys gets out with a strap. The other guy tells him in Armenian, don't do it. It's not worth it. Get the fuck out of here. And the dude holsters up and runs away. We could have had a really, really bad situation. And it was just because of a breakdown in these foundational concepts that we talk about when we have the luxury of two officers in a car, right? Contact and cover. It translates across the spectrum. You know what I mean? And it was just a breakdown in those fundamentals because these guys were young. They were starting to feel really good about themselves. They were developing those foundational skills that we talked about as far as observation. But their tactics were, it was scary. And it broke my heart to see these guys that were working so hard. When I had to write that up and I had to call the captain, at home. And that sucked. To his credit, and he's a good dude, which can't say about all captains, but he's like, how do we mitigate this? Is this, can we train this? Like, I don't want to screw these kids. But man, that was scary to see that guy get out. I mean, he comes out like that and he's
ready.
He was ready. And it just, man. Yeah. So, When people talk about just abandoning these concepts that we learn in the police academy because of the streets,
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it can be scary. Now, it worked out well. And like I said, those kids, such good kids. Everything's great. But when we started talking about, you know, guys that get onto field training and guys that are not, you know, necessarily inculcated in the way things should be done. They're kind of brought into this small group of this is the way we do things. And that's scary. And it is supervision's task to ensure that that is not happening. And we have the tools to do it now too. You know, we have body camera, we have dash cams, we have all these tools, and good supervisors need to be kind of culling through that stuff and coming up with training conversations to have with the troops. The problem with this is the troops tend to view these things as being punitive, right? Oh, I just got my ass chewed. Sarge just chewed my ass. My brother, I'm not trying to chew your ass. I'm just trying to get you to think a little bit because I want you to live a long, healthy life and be successful in this career and, you know, not get hurt and not get sued and not get fired.
Yeah. And I think the reason why they feel that way is just because of somewhat of the culture that they may have already experienced. And they feel as if it's that rank structure of, oh, when somebody tells you to do something from above, it's because you did something wrong. It's not necessarily in a positive light. It's like, hey, we're trying to improve your abilities, your foundation, and kind of go from there. But that's a really good point. Like, you brought up two really good points. One is, you know, one thing that I feel like isn't taught, or I guess three good points is one is the ability to, we know how people learn now. Like, we have the science of how people learn and the ability to make them learn faster and retain. And obviously that consistent training is super important. But also, you know, when we discuss, you brought up a really, really good point about that guy came out, and the reason why those officers did not get hurt is because that guy then decided he didn't want to hurt them. Right. Yeah. And that's a very scary feeling. And that's where people don't understand. Like, the reason why you may be alive today is because somebody didn't want to kill you. And that's just the reality of the situation. And this is why training and communication is so important. And that's why even on the EFC side, like the defensive tactics side that we teach, as it pertains to multiple officer apprehension, subject control, whatever you want to call it, the biggest SOP there is communication. It isn't the officer's ability, it's the ability to talk. It's the ability to say, hey man, I got this guy. Cool. You cover this guy. And then your area of responsibility is that guy.
Yeah.
And just like you said, I think it kind of, you know, everybody wants a piece of the action sometimes. I understand that, but that can also be very detrimental as seen. That's sounds like definitely a butthole pucker factor moment for those officers. And I'm really glad. And now, did they perceive that as like you talking to them as punishment, or do they perceive it as Sarge is actually just trying to make us better?
I think initially they saw it as me being punitive, me being, you know, because I'll be honest, I was so scared watching that because nobody had seen it. Nobody knew what was going on. And it wasn't until I was reviewing the use of force 3 hours later that I saw what happened. And, you know, I was working morning watch, which in our parlance is, some people call it midnight. Some people call it, you know what I mean? But it's graveyards basically. And so, you know, by now it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm on like my third monster and trying to just plow through this report because when the captain gets it in the morning, captain wants to know what's going on. And, I didn't take them to the side and, I wasn't using my mentoring voice. I was using my dad voice.
Yeah.
And so I think at first it put them on their heels a little bit, but then I was to the point of tears and I told them, watch this. And then they realized, oh my God. Shit. And I'm like, I'm practically crying. And I'm like, you guys could have gotten killed today. You could have gotten killed today. Yeah. Don't be mad at me when I write this up because I love you and I want you to stay alive.
And you're a rare breed, Jeremy. You're most people are very objective when they're at work, right? And I think that it's okay to have a little emotion too, because that's what kind of drives us to be better, right? Like that's what that's what I personally feel like drives me to be better and you know, to do what I do and what our team does. Is you can objectively look at things to diagnose and break down and solve, but as it pertains to why you're looking at objectively, is it's your mission. It is who you are as a person. And I think it, and those officers are very lucky it was you having to tell them, you know, the hard reality of what just happened to them. And they, again, they may have not have seen it or even saw it until when they saw it, they probably was, you probably hear a fucking pin drop, I would assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. It I was, mean, that's just what you're telling me. It makes my butt pack. Like, and I wasn't even, I'm 3,000 miles away. You know what I mean? And again, looking at the positive note of it, it's what needs to happen. It's the hard reality. And this is kind of where I personally feel as if people want change. And I'm not just saying like the general public, but cops also want change. Hey man, we want better training. We want better gear. And I think the general public has a hard time actually understanding that, like, oh, you guys are just a gang and all this shit that they say. And it's more just like,
yeah,
it's like, dude, yeah, but like you understand sometimes the administration and the political field screws us over too, because we want better gear. We want better training. We just, you know, I have a family. I can't afford, you know, $10,000 a year to train on my own or whatever. And again, that's kind of being a little bit exaggerant, but at the same time, it's true. And I think one thing that would really help that push, and I'd like your input on this, is, you know, if there is, let's just say, a bad use of force, that, you know, of course the officer is also held accountable for that bad use of force, but also like administration or some type of leadership role, I personally believe needs to also be held accountable. Why did the officer make this decision? What kind of training do they have? What kind of tools or what kind of ability do you give them? Are they allowed to work out? You give them consistent training. No, they get their 2 hours a year to train defensive tactics.
2 hours a year? Wow. I wish I had worked for a department that gave me 2 hours a year.
It's crazy, right?
We get e-training, I can still say we. It's just weird thinking that I'm not active.
You can say we, bro. Anymore. People get it. It's okay. You've earned it.
There's a lot of command laziness. So, and this is going to kind of get a little bit outside the wheelhouse of what we're talking about, but
that's okay though.
You know, in the rush for accountability and transparency, it's bred a culture of institutional command laziness, in that they're no longer looking at whether or not the training is effective. They're looking at the training as something to cover their ass when they are held to task because something has gone wrong. And it's a very dangerous place to be. And, you know, to be honest, I don't see that changing at the command level anytime soon, because the type of person who is interested in being a chief of police very rarely is the type of person who is interested in being a good police officer.
100%.
Sometimes they converge.
It's rare.
I know a couple, but I also know several that, while they might have some redeeming character traits, usually don't.
Yeah, they're politicians at that point.
They're politicians at that point. And that's not always a bad thing. Like, you have certain guys like Bill Bratton. I was attached to his hip for a while, and people can say what they want, but that dude cared. He cared deeply. And when he would talk to me about training, he'd say, well, is this working? What do we need to change? So he was a politician, but he also cared deeply about the troops, and he cared about the job. He cared about the mission. But he was still a politician. Unfortunately, that balancing act seems to have been lost across the United States, especially in the wake of things that were happening in 2020. You know, it's funny because you have all these police chiefs kneeling, and then all of a sudden they're going, huh, it's really weird. Retention is an issue.
Shocker. Wonder why. Yeah. No, well, it's also the thing too, is, you know, you think about what politicians do, and it's, they go to appease the general public. That's how they get votes and love, basically. But at some point, the general public, especially as it pertains to law enforcement, they're not cops. They've never been cops. They've never experienced anything like it. So for them to say, oh, we're going to try to make these people who have no experience doing anything, we're going to try to make them happy and do what they say, which makes absolute no logical sense ever in the history. Zero.
Nobody's being an adult. So it used to be
accurate. Yes.
It used to be, regardless of your political leanings, you would look at something and go, say, for instance, transients camping and pooping on the streets. You'd say, well, as a liberal politician, this is going to affect my tax base. Shopkeepers aren't going to like this. They're not going to make as much money. They're not going to pay as much taxes. I'm not going to have as much money to spend on these social programs that I like. Republicans or conservatives would look at it and go, well, I just, it offends my sense of right and wrong, and it, you know, whatever. But they would come in the middle and they'd go, obviously, this is not sustainable. We can't do this. And then you would have the outcry from the citizenry. We have people camping on the streets and shitting on our sidewalks. Well, we're at a point now where the people have been told that if they cry about that, if they complain about that, then they are somehow not good people. So you have people now there's not this groundswell of outrage that these things are taking place. So the politicians aren't being held to task, and they're not going to force any change because they're not being, nobody is forcing them to act like adults. You know what I mean? And that's going to kind of, using that to circle back around, when it comes to affecting change in law enforcement, they're not going to do it on their own. They're not our friends. The politicians aren't our friends. You know, it's funny, even historically conservative politicians now aren't really law enforcement's friends. They'll turn on us in a heartbeat.
Right.
You see it a little bit in the Second Amendment community where, of which I'm a proud member and a proud supporter. But you see Same. These small little groups that get super, super, like anarchist, you know what I mean? And it's like, so you have the police officers that are stuck in the middle and nobody's really supporting them on either side. You know, you're either a jackbooted thug or, that the government has unleashed on these poor citizens, or you're in it for yourself and you're a member of a law enforcement gang, which I've never seen one, you know? But I think that if we're going to start seeing effective change, it's going to have to be through the courts, right?
And
departments. 100%. Departments and cities are going to have to start seeing real punitive judgments because they did not provide effective training. And I mean, there's some case law. I think it was Canton versus Harris or something like that. I forget exactly, where the department has to provide a baseline of training, but it's still really the standard. Still, really, it isn't there. And I think until we start seeing cities and departments held accountable in courts of law, we're going to continue having problems with officers not getting enough training or getting check the box training that is not effective.
Yeah. So just to reference that case, Cannon versus Harris, U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the municipality was not liable as the inadequacy of police training cannot be linked to deliberate indifference by particular officers. The Be Effective podcast is brought to you by Effective Fitness Training. EFT is a performance-driven fitness program designed to improve individual performance. Created by our team of physical therapists, strength conditioning coaches, nutrition specialists, and a team of active and former law enforcement with over 100 years combined experience, EFT is developed for those who want the most comprehensive fitness plan available. Use promo code podcast at checkout for 10% off the life of your membership. It's almost like that's kind of my biggest issue, is it's not all agencies. It's not all leadership? Because there are, again, just like, you know, I know some really good, some really great chiefs and some really good sheriffs. We just had Chief Reynolds here in Charlestown. He actually just passed a couple days ago, unfortunately. He was a guy, though, I've been in multiple meetings with him about implementing fitness and defensive tactics training in the agency, and he was there. This man works out every day, like wore his duty belt to work every single day, wore his full uniform every single day. Guys would go to him and go, Chief, you know, we really need this for the canine unit. We really need this for patrol. And he would do his best to do it because he understood the job. And it's super unfortunate guys like him, obviously end up taking the final journey. But man, what a great guy. And you know, people like him just give me faith that there's still really good people that are in positions of power that want to affect change, that actually are a cop's cop. And I say that all the time, because my first question whenever I talk to somebody about their agency, I'm like, hey, is your administration, like, are they a cop's cop? And what I mean, by that is like, oh, not some like thin blue line brotherhood gang. I mean, like,
Punisher skull.
Yeah. It's none of that shit. It's like, do they understand the job? Do they understand the needs of the job? If the answer is yes, then you got someone who understands, and then you can go to them and go, we have a problem, and they'll actually turn their ears on and fucking listen to you. And maybe they do something about it. Maybe they give you the old, yeah, I'm going to, or they'll actually be like, hey, bring me some options. And that seems to be, at least the people that we deal with on the defensive tactics side, that seems to be the case, is that their agency is now realizing that, shit, we're behind the eight ball. Like, we are really behind on certain areas, and we need to kind of beef it up. What options are there? And then you have these guys really through social media are now bringing their administration options, which I think is great. What would you say is, as a supervisor working for a very large agency, if a younger officer were to come to you and ask for, let's just say, help, hey man, this happened on this call, I don't feel comfortable doing this. Like, what, how did you approach that? Cause I have a feeling that a lot of officers are obviously either scared to ask, don't want to ask, don't want to show weakness. It's like that. Like, how do you approach that as a supervisor?
So I'll tell you this, and this is probably a topic for an entirely different show, but I exercised more authority, and I helped more people, and I affected more change as a peer than I did as a supervisor. When I was the tenured P3 in the back, I was the guy, because I was big brother. I was the big brother. And I'll tell you, even though 2019, 2020, 2021 were very tough years for law enforcement because of all the things that were going on, when it came to the side of me that enjoys being a mentor, I had never felt more fulfilled than I did then. And the reason I'm talking about that is because just last night I got a text from one of the guys who was a brand new guy in, would have been 19. I don't even think it was 2020 yet. And I spent a lot of time with him. You know what I mean? And I would, when things were slow, we'd all meet up. I would buy the coffee. I would buy the donuts. I'd buy a guy's breakfast. I would just do those things that an older brother or mentor should. And when I promoted and I left, I gave him a set of my P3 stripes. And I said, brother, you need to be a training officer one of these days. And, and over the course of the last couple of years, he'd call me, he'd ask me, I have an interview coming up. What should I say? How should I say it? Or I've had several guys approach me about, firearms training, defensive tactics training, questions on these things. But anyways, this kid, he just got a P3 spot. So, it was very gratifying, and it's not the first. And I that is a direct result of the fact that I looked at my job when I was the senior guy in the back of the room. I looked at my job as making everybody in that room better. I've said it before, brother. This, if you want to be good at this job, it has to be a calling. And I don't know anybody who's really good at the job, who's really good at the job, that didn't look at it as a calling.
100%.
And I'm not saying it to be corny, like, you know, oh my God, I'm like a paladin or something. No, it's just,
yeah. No, no,
there has to be a point in time where you go, I am a round peg in a round hole. This is why I was put on this planet. And that level of joy and professionalism and everything else has to kind of emanate from you, because those dudes in the back of the room drive the watch for better or for worse. And when they're shitty people who have done nothing but make bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, and they hate the department and they hate their third wife and they hate everybody, that emanates, man. And that can, I've watched more young police officers soured on this job by bad training officers than I have by bad incidents, to be quite honest with you. The job's not for everybody. And if you can't approach the job with a certain level of joy and enthusiasm, no matter how bad things get, then it's not the job for you. And the problem is, we don't do a good job of screening people to get in. We never have. And now it's even going to be worse. You know,
yeah,
you're going to get a lot of people on this job that look at it as a job, and they're going to be miserable. And that misery is going to infect the next generation of police officers. And things aren't going to get better, because, you know, I know that a lot of our friends on the left are looking at this as an opportunity to reimagine law enforcement by bringing in a bunch of wide-eyed liberal kids, but that's not going to help anything.
Good luck.
Because within 3 years, they're going to be completely disillusioned, and they're going to hate everybody, and they're going to be even more heavy-handed than people who look at it as like a profession at arms.
It's true. No, it's true. And you brought up a really good point too. And I kind of want to talk about, because I'm also a huge believer in, you know, control what you can't control, and then whatever you can't control, like either try to let go or adapt, right?
Yeah. Stoicism. I mean, every good police officer I know is a bit of a stoic.
Right. And this is where, like, I try to tell guys, because I have, again, one of my best friends is a cop here, and he always listens to the podcast when I reference him. He's like, you motherfucker, you said you weren't going to say anything. I was like, I didn't say your name, bitch. So, you know, we always talk shit back and forth. Again, he's like, he was in my wedding, you know, super good dude. But, you know, and you know, he cares. He really, really loves the profession. He cares. He lives and breathes this stuff, specifically the unit he's in. And sometimes the administration just fucks him. And it's, he gets very emotional. And so I try to be, he's got almost double the time that I had in law enforcement. And I try to tell him, like, you know, just from a different objective view for someone who's been out for a minute, you know, I'm like, remember, dude, you're just a piece in the machine. You are a timing belt and an engine. When the timing belt goes, they put in a new timing belt. Like, you're a spark plug, dude. Like, you're like, and this is kind of where it's like, this is where you have to value yourself. And again, I'm not saying don't be a good person. Don't be a great supervisor, because he's a great supervisor. He cares a lot. And sometimes that disappointment, can be taxing. It can be almost more frustrating than dealing with anybody on the street, right? Like, it can be more frustrating, and it's within. That's why I say all the time, the biggest threat to law enforcement is law enforcement itself. Because when you get those people who don't view it like you and I do, it's very difficult to reason with someone who doesn't view it that way. You're basically banging your head against the wall. And then it's like, well, do I continue to bang my head against the wall? Do I try to go to a different division? Do I try to go to a different unit? Whatever the case may be. So like that balance of being able to realize where I'm at currently, and then like, maybe I need to go somewhere else. Like, what are your thoughts on, I mean, cause I'm sure in your experience, you have witnessed that or have felt that multiple times. And how did you kind of take on that endeavor?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was blessed in that I worked for a large department. And when I found myself getting, I don't want to say stressed, but when I found myself losing that joy for the job, because of my professional reputation, because of the fact that I had developed skills, I was able to go find another job within the department and still be really, really happy. When I left counterterrorism, there was multiple reasons why. One of them was my son had drowned. I needed to be more available, for my family. And that was the big one. But the reason why I was able to move so quickly is because I had developed a certain level of skill and I had developed a certain reputation, and it was easy for the department to move me into another spot. Some people don't have that level of self-knowledge, and they tie so much ego into the job that they look at it as, if I leave an operational position, be it patrol or be it like fugitives or like one of these really like super adrenaline rushed kind of dangerous spots on the job, that like somehow they're weak. And you know, it really is kind of, it's so common that I think it's just the type of person who's attracted to law enforcement, right? They want to put themselves in these situations and they want to be the guy. And I love that. And I respect that because I always wanted to be the guy too, but you have to have a level of maturity and a level of self-knowledge to understand that, you know what, either the job's not for me, or this unit's not for me, or, you know, this division's not for me. And you have to kind of have the courage to say, this is not what's best for me. I'm not able to do the best job that I can possibly do because I'm struggling right now. And you don't see that a whole lot. Instead, you'll see guys just kind of double down and dig in. And it leads to some of the other things that we've talked about, you know, guys starting to abuse substances, guys not getting the right amount of sleep, guys that used to train that stopped training, guys that, you know, they, because they're not happy, and they're in this continual like loop where they're wanting to be that guy. So they're going out, putting themselves in dangerous situations a lot. And so you'll get these like spikes, right? And you get these peaks and valleys, and it's just taxing on people's systems, man. And you see this time and time again, where people just, they get burned out, and it's really, it's not the job's fault. It's kind of their fault because they're not, you know, looking at it as maturely as maybe they should, thinking, well, maybe I need to go to investigations, or maybe I need to talk to somebody, or maybe I need to do this, or I need to do that. And so it, in a long answer, that's, you know, kind of the way I feel about that.
That's awesome. And thank you for sharing that, because I personally know a lot of cops that experienced that. They experienced I feel stuck. I'm not happy, and I don't feel like I can go anywhere, because just like you said, maybe they don't have any other skills. I always highly encourage police officers to develop some type of outside skill, whether it's business, whether it's another business, whether it's doing what you're doing, doing what I'm doing. Like I started a company when I was a police officer, because I was all like, and it wasn't, it was definitely not income motivated. It was something I love to do. And it was kind of an outlet for me, and it got my brain away. Now, granted, it was still within the profession, but it was something that I really, truly enjoyed doing.
There are so many things that you can learn on this job. And it kills me when I see young coppers and even guys that are headed towards middle age, I'm just a patrol cop. No, man, you're not just a patrol cop. You're a communicator. You know what I mean? Let's take a look at just psychomotor skills that you can learn. Shooting has been great for me, right? I've made a great living. I work for a firearms company now. I work for Mossberg. I'm the military law enforcement manager for a large firearms manufacturer. And why? Because I learned some really great skills on the police department on the government dime, and I was able to take advantage of those. I know guys that do tons. They were just patrol cops, right? And I'm air quoting just patrol cops. You know what they do now? They do expert testimony, and they make a pile of cash.
Piles, dude. Piles.
Piles of cash. $350 an hour.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
For just a patrol cop. No, this is a person who looked at it, became incredibly experienced, put themselves in a position to start writing policy, put themselves in a position to start teaching policy. And you don't have to go to the academy to do it. Every division has training spots, you know, on big departments. They go to on their own, sometimes on their own dime, they get professional recognition by going to these large conferences. You have a bunch of different investigation, you know, National Association of Technological Investigators. When I was putting listening devices and tracking devices on cars, these are ways that good cop who looks at it as a profession can either A, extend that profession out, or B, do what I did, get to a certain point where you realize the job's killing me. And then, but I have these other skills where I can transition right now. It gives you options, you know, and that is so important. And so many opportunities get passed up by guys because they just can't see the forest for the trees, and they don't realize that they're learning these skills that can just take them to the next level, like defensive tactics. You know, it's not that a guy with a law enforcement or military background is going to be better at teaching defensive tactics than somebody who has just studied defensive tactics. However, when you add that to the mix, and it gives them the ability to say, well, you know what, over the course of my career where I have taught this many police officers, I have seen that this, whatever it is either effective or not effective. It gives that added level of credibility, you know, and when you're out there now, you're teaching these things and you're trying to take it to the next level. And like in your case, you're like we talked about in the beginning, you have these opportunities at these really large departments. Now, you get those opportunities because you have put yourself in the position to get those opportunities. And so many cops don't understand that, man.
No, they don't. And I have multiple police officers reach out to me and want to talk about business. And I love it. You know, I run two successful businesses. Between the two, I started with nothing. I started out with I built an audience, and then from there, I was able to then develop businesses off that audience. And I love when guys either have a product or have an idea, they bring it to me, and I try to help them develop it. There's very few that actually take that advice and turn it into action. but at the same time, like I know that business coaching is a very lucrative market. I don't charge anything to help these guys. Like, I love seeing guys develop because maybe one day they can work with me and my businesses doing what I do. And then we could, you know, obviously continue to grow. Like, we're mission-driven companies. I try to tell these guys, just like you said, like, you have to love it. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to, again, if you love landscaping, that's like the infamous first responder go-to, at least it is here in the Southeast. There's absolutely nothing wrong with landscaping. Do I consider that a long-term retirement job? I mean, sure. If you want to just ride a lawnmower all day, sure. But like, do you love cutting grass? Like, is that what you love to do? No, you love shooting guns, teaching, training, developing. So why not? You have a set of skills that you developed over almost, you know, shoot over two decades, right? Why not utilize that to do what you love, get paid for it, and continue to live your life? Because I always tell guys, like, you can still love the profession, you can still love the people in the profession, but you still have responsibilities at home. And that's your health, your family, and your happiness. Because you only get one of these lives, right? And I always tell guys this, like, please, please don't just rely on the government to pay you money. The government is not here to help you.
And nowadays, it can be taken away like that. It can, 100%. You know, even for something where you thought you were doing the right thing, which historically departments and cities have been good about. Well, the officer's heart was in the right place. They thought they were doing the right thing. This is a training issue. Hey, man, those days are done. If the optics on something are bad, they're going to push you under a bus, and you have 100%. To have other skills, you know?
Yeah, bro. No, you're right. And that's why I always try to tell guys, please look for other things, start your own business, work for another. Like, when I see guys posting about it on the Instagram page, a lot of those photos don't get a lot of likes. They don't get a lot of shares. They don't, because they're doing something that's not cool and catchy and fun. But here I am going, I always comment, I always like it, and I go, awesome, dude, crush it. Like, supporting them 100%, because believe it or not, it takes fucking balls to do something like that. It takes, because it's going to take time away from you, away from your family. I always tell guys, like, they live for the overtime. Stop living for the overtime. Use that time. Go ahead,
please. No, I was just agreeing with you. Use that time, invest that time in yourself.
Yes.
Not the city.
Yes, the $40, $50, $70 an hour, whatever it is the fuck you get paid, is not worth an hour. It's not worth your time. Take that time, develop something beautiful for yourself and for your family, that when you do have, and I hate these, there's this one guy, I can't remember his name. Fucking Andy Frisella. I like some of the stuff he says. He said something the other day about don't have a plan B. Plan B is for losers or people who can't win or some shit like that. And I'm like, all the other stuff you say, and I get, he, you know, he's doing it for the optics and the protein and whatever else. But like, at the same time, my thought process is, bro, you need a plan B, a plan C, a plan D. I was like, you can't tell me, Andy Frisella, you only have one stream of income. Like, you tell me you own a nine figure business. You're telling me you make all nine figures from that one business? Doubt it.
Total doubtful. You know who else said that, and where Frisella's probably pulling it from? Schwarzenegger gave a speech once about not having a plan B, which stupid. Is total garbage. Because if you've looked at that man's career or since he got here, he's had plan B, plan C, plan D. Him and Franco Colombo laid bricks. They started a construction company. Yeah, he took money. He invested into real estate. That dude was a millionaire. Supplements. He was a millionaire before he made it big in the movies,
dude. And that's what people don't even get, is like they take this advice for some of these guys, and this is kind of going on a different rant, but like all these like motivational dudes, people like, oh, who's your favorite motivator? I don't have one. Do I respect them? Sure, absolutely. I respect what they do. Like I'm a huge fan of Cam Haynes. I think he's not even a cop. He hunts and he's like, does like I think there's like electrical work. I'm not sure. I don't want to disrespect him, but I love Cam Haynes, right? Like, but again, like, he's more motivating to me than someone like David Goggins. Like, I think that David Goggins is I don't know him personally, but like, I'm not a huge David Goggins fan. Like, I think that he's destroying his body, and I'm like, cool, man. So when you're 70, you can't walk. Like, you're not gonna be able to go hard ever again. Right. Like, let's just be real here. Like, you're still human. Like, the body still needs to recover. Again, he's absolute savage when it comes to that sense, but. I'm just a realist. So when I look at these guys, I'm like, people that I follow are in the business world or the health and science world, right? Like, I still follow the cop page. I listen to cop podcasts and all that kind of stuff too. But I mostly deviate from that and going, okay, like, I surrounded myself with people who are much better than I am, who are much smarter than I am. How can I absorb that knowledge and then have a different output, right? And so cops have the tendency to put the blinders on when they get there, because my first, let's say my first 5 years of the job, I was just the job, and saw nothing else but the job.
Right.
And then about my sixth, possibly going into my seventh year, I realized like all my other friends that I graduated college and high school with were doing all these cool things. And I was like, I was just working, like no days off, just working. And I was like, man, I would love to go on a vacation, man. I would love to get a new car. I would love to be able to not eat fucking sardines and, you know, rotisserie chickens every night. You know, being a cop in the Southeast, it's expensive, especially where I lived, and I didn't make that much money. And so I was like, man, like I love doing the fitness stuff. Like, why don't I start doing that? Like, I train every day. Cops ask me all the time how to train. And so then my agency basically, just like you said, the agency gave me the skills to say, hey, you're the fitness guy. Why don't you do something, you know, fitness wise for the agency? Okay. So I basically wrote out an entire business. I got paid to write out an entire business plan for the agency. They basically were like, it's kind of whatever. Like, well, I have something that I just did and I got paid for, so I'm going to go ahead and implement it. And that's all I did.
How much time did you have on the job?
7 years.
Perfect. You don't have to have 30 years on the job to be considered an expert. That's nonsense. And so many guys, now part of this is the profession itself. It's the only profession where you can have 25 years on the job. Somebody walks in and goes, hey, boot. Hey, rookie. Because, you know, they've got 30 years on the job. But that is so important. 7 years on the job, you're writing lesson plans. I wrote a lesson plan.
Oh yeah.
I had, let's see, it was 05. So I had 7 years on the job too. I actually, got called to testify. That was brought up as a document. And this was, 15 years later, that was brought up as a document. And when they asked me a question, I said, well, I wrote it. And they didn't realize that I wrote it. I said, the serial number at the bottom of the page, 34528. That's my serial number. I wrote that lesson plan. I can speak authoritatively on that lesson plan.
Right.
So now you have a guy that was, I had 20 years on the job, and I'm referencing something that I wrote, you know, 15 years earlier.
Yeah.
Because that stuff stays with you. And like you said, I was able to take these skills that I learned, like writing lesson plans. And I've sold lesson plans. I've written lesson plans for other people. But I didn't know how to do that. I was taught how to do that. The department taught me how to do that. Larry Mudgett, John Service taught me how to do that. I just kind of took it and went with it. And I wish more people would. And I love the fact that you wrote your business plan on the city dime. And when they were like, nah, it's okay, you took it and you've made a career out of it. It's amazing. Yeah,
no, I've not only made a career, but I've also given an opportunity for other cops to also do the same thing. Cause the way that I operate my businesses, and I try to tell you guys, this is, I never cap my guys. I give them the opportunity to always advance themselves and to always have an opportunity to become basically entrepreneurs, to where they basically learn to work smart, learn to work hard, develop a set of skills. And then if they stay here to work with me and my team, great. If not, great. I wish them obviously the best success, because the majority of them have kids, right? And I'm like, hey, I would much rather you work for me and spend time with your family than be at a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning, get into a use of force that changes the course of your life forever. And it's like, I would much rather you just work out or go train defensive tactics or go teach another agency. Cause on the combative side, like the majority of our instructors are active cops and they're going to these law enforcement agencies and officially teaching there. And, you know, and we pay our guys well, we take care of them. Like, that's super important to me. And the fact that you're kind of just basically the foundation, you're just echoing, we're just kind of just sit here and just freaking like echoing each other is, you know, absolutely amazing. Again, to go back to the time on, like, obviously there is so much experience and knowledge that someone possesses that has 20, 30 plus years on the job. You know, I don't ever consider myself an expert. I say that I've done the job. I have a good understanding of the job. I can speak on it, But again, like, just like you, like, I absolutely love having you on because you just bring, one, you're super articulate, you're super experienced. And I think that's also very valuable because a lot of people are not as articulate as you are. Which I guess does speak for the education that California has.
Hey, Los Angeles City Schools, buddy, right here. Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
There's, graduated with a 2.0 GPA.
Look at that product of old California over there. But Jeremy, so what do you have? This is a great conversation. So what do you have going on now?
So I am the military law enforcement sales manager for Mossberg Firearms.
Awesome.
A lot of people don't realize I have a huge long relationship with Mossberg, even though, LAPD was a Remington agency for a long time. We'll see if we can change that. I know Hopefully. Some people. in the Marine Corps, when I deployed, I used a Mossberg shotgun. In fact, I won a Bronze Star with a V, with a Mossberg shotgun. And, it's funny not to go on a crazy tangent here, but, you know, in law enforcement, we're starting to see agencies kind of get away from shotguns sometimes. And it's because shotgun requires a lot of training. That goes back to what we talked to, right? And it's easier to train on other things. But I'll be honest, I don't say this to be flip or to remove any of the gravity from the situation. I've shot people with a lot of different things, and I've never seen anything as effective as a shotgun, which is why I continue to preach the gospel of the gauge, because every time you press the trigger, I mean, you press the trigger once and it's going to hit that target with 9 projectiles. That's
no, man, the shotgun's effective. The shotgun, as I was, again, my first long gun I was issued was a Remington 870 from probably the early 90s. And it still worked in the 2000s, right? They're super reliable. I honestly liked it. I mean, that thing was indestructible. That thing was a tank, right? And again, I used to have a Mossberg. We used to have like a plethora of shotguns, just because whenever we get our hands on all the time, right?
Right.
But no, I mean, that's great. So are you still doing the Outdoor Channel stuff as well? Are you still
doing that? Yeah, I have The Best Defense on the Outdoor Channel, which is a TV show. Thank you for letting me plug that.
Of course.
That's been great. I haven't been able to do as much writing, simply because now that I work for a gun company, the appearance of playing favorites or, you know, it's tough. It would put me in a tough position. And I was sad to leave my family at Guns and Ammo. Those lessons that we learned, you know, I'm doing things now on an executive level. I'm a manager at a large company and I had never graduated college. And dude, I gained skills via the police department. Yeah, I gained the psychomotor skills, but I also gained the managerial skills, the communication skills, the writing skills. I got all that from being a police officer.
And look at you now, man. Look at you now, Mr. Big Time. I love it, dude. I love seeing you on TV. I love that you're absolutely crushing it outside of the profession. It's very rare that happens. And I hope people listening to this podcast take something away. But where can people reach you? Where can people find you?
So best place is probably going to be the Instagram. That's, even though I haven't been doing much on it, at J.E. Stafford on Instagram. And I answer everything. It just sometimes it takes a long time. That's probably going to be the best one. You can reach me through the Outdoor Channel Instagram or Facebook stuff. But just go to my Instagram. Real quick, I know we're on a hard stop.
Sure. No, you're good.
To all my cops out there that are getting into middle age, go get checked up. Last year, last July, I went down in roll call. My watch started beeping. I was having an arrhythmia. I went down. I didn't know I had problems. They got me to the hospital. My blood pressure was like 220 over 190.
Dude.
I have heart damage. You know, there's things that my body will never be. I'm on a level of medication that the doctor's like, I'm not comfortable putting you on this, but I kind of have to. And had that not happened to me, and had not one of my other supervisors got me to the hospital in time, you know, this conversation could not be taking place. Go get checked up. Even if you're in good shape, I'm in good shape, man. I train.
You look great, dude.
Now I train twice a day, but at the time I was still training. I was CrossFitting. I was rolling. I was boxing. I was doing everything I needed to do. And I had no idea. This job will kill you if you let it, man. Don't let it kill you. Go get checked up. Get taken care of.
Guys, great advice from someone who I absolutely love talking to. And then we will link all of your social media links to the show notes below. So guys, give Jeremy a follow, check him out on the Outdoor Channel, go buy a Mossberg shotgun. And if you are a law enforcement agency as well, and you are looking to transition to some type of firearm, please just probably shoot you a DM on Instagram. Yeah, and
we'll
take
care of them
and you guys can set it up. But Jeremy, it's always been a pleasure, my brother. Until next time.
Brother, love you. Be good.
Hey, man.
Bye.
Stay safe.